Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
November the 19th, and we just completed Rosh Chodesh Kislev, and we're beginning Parshas Emor on page 672. The Sefer of Vayikra, which we're in right now, is called Toras Kohanim. It's the laws of the Kohanim. This Parsha Emor is the Parsha which most reflects that title, where the whole Sefer has a lot to do with Karbonos and how to handle the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, but this Parsha here, especially the beginning, deals with Kohanim specifically. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Emor el HaKohanim b'nei Aaron, say to the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, V'amarta aleim, you shall say to them, L'nefesh lo yitama be'amav, they may not become tamei to a nefesh, to a soul, in its nation. So this is the prohibition for a Kohen to become tamei to a dead body. Now, we've learned before, there are many types of tumah. Tumah comes into play when a person comes in contact with most types of dead animals, not those that are kosher and shechted properly, but other than that, most types of dead animals do have some sort of tumah. Tumah can come into play for a person's own body can produce tumah, and so there are ways of tumah happening. The Kohanim are no different than anybody else when it comes to all types of tumah, except for tumas mace. Tumah, which is coming in contact with a dead person, that is the one that Kohanim are prohibited from happening, as opposed to everybody else. This only applies to the males, the male Kohanim, not the females, and it will include any form of tumah to a dead body, which would mean touching a dead body, being in a room with a dead body, or passing over a dead body, walking over a dead body. The reason why Kohanim cannot walk into a graveyard is for this reason. Because in a graveyard, they would be stepping over or leaning over or somehow coming in contact with a dead body. And that's why they can't go into graveyards. That's also why they normally cannot come to a funeral, because a funeral typically is done with the deceased there in the room. Meaning if it's not a graveside funeral, if it's in a building, generally speaking, the deceased is there in the room in which you're holding the hespedim, the eulogies. So a Kohen can't walk into that room because there's a dead body in the room. So this is where it comes from. It's from over here that they cannot become tamei to a soul, be'amav, in its nation. Now, first of all, this is talking about Jews. Now, there is also tumas mace with a non-Jew, but it's a little different than with a Jew. Right now, we're going to focus on Jews. But the word be'amav in its nation also is coming to tell us that this prohibition is only when there's someone else who's able to deal or handle or bury the dead body, so that the Kohen is not allowed to come in contact with the dead body, provided that the dead body is be'amav in its nation, which means there are others who are able to take care of it. But if no one is able to take care of the dead body, except for the Kohen, then that would be called a mace mitzvah. Mace mitzvah means that there's no one to bury the dead, in which case the first Jew who's able to do so is required to bury the dead. So if a Kohen comes across a dead Jew and no one else is able to bury that person, then the Kohen is required to become Tamei in order to bury the dead. This rule applies today, even though we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, but it is one of the prohibitions of a Kohen, that a Kohen is not allowed to become Tamei to a dead body. A Kohen cannot serve on the Chevra Kadisha for this reason. And it applies even if the Kohen is already Tamei. Meaning, let's say a Kohen It could happen in a number of different ways. Let's say a kohen didn't know the rule and came in contact with a dead body. Or let's say someone died suddenly in the room in which the kohen was. Or let's say the kohen had to bury a meis mitzvah. So the kohen became tamei. So even though we do not have the para aduma, we don't have the ashes from the red heifer with which to remove the tuma. That's why we are all tamei meis. If you've ever been to a funeral, you're tamei, and there's nothing you do about it. You remain tamei until the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. There's nothing we can do. We're just tamei, which is fine. A kohen, if he becomes tamei, the prohibition still applies. He's not allowed to continue to become tamei or become tamei again, even though it doesn't change his status. He is tamei. Doesn't make a difference. He's not allowed to, once he becomes tamei, it's not like he now has a free pass and he can go to funerals. Doesn't work that way. A kohen has to stay away from there even after he's become tamei one time. Yeah.
You said that, two things. One, that you always remain tamei if you, you know, if you go to a funeral, but when you come after a funeral, go to the cemetery, you usually wash, and
yeah.
You don't go anyplace. So doesn't the washing...
No.
So
that only helps for ruach ra, for the evil spirit that goes on the hands, like when you wake up in the morning.
Right.
There's also one when you go into a graveyard, but that does not help for the tumas meis.
Okay. And for the kohanim, isn't there a way, like, of being surrounded, if, you know, if God forbid it's a family member, or something that, you know, to go to a cemetery.
We're going to learn that a family member, he could become tamei for.
Oh.
That's what we're going to learn. There's an exception for a family member.
So he could just go, or he still has to
No. The problem is that it's only permitted to become tamei to the family member, and exactly how to do that becomes tricky. So what they typically do is they bury Kohanim's relatives on the periphery of the graveyard. So the Kohanim's family can be on the outside of the graveyard, but still visit the grave. That's what they try to do, something like that. We'll see as we move a little further here. Pasuk Beis verse 2. I'm sorry, one more thing in Pasuk Aleph. That when it says the verb to speak is used three times in the Pasuk. It says, Hashem said to Moshe, say to the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, and you shall say to them. Seems redundant. So Chazal tell us, Emor ve'amarta, say and you shall say. That teaches us that the Kohanim are to say these rules to others. Meaning you say to the Kohanim these rules, and the Kohanim in turn are supposed to repeat the rules. Now who are they supposed to repeat it to? The answer is, they're supposed to repeat it to their children. That the Kohanim are to train their children to keep the Kohen rules. The truth is, we're all required to train our children to keep the rules of the Torah. So what's different about the Kohen in that the Torah has to emphasize that the Kohen should teach these rules to his children? So the commentaries say, because the Kohanim are going to have different rules than the rest of the Jewish people. Now, we are used to being different. Our rules are different. If a person is part of a working group, a company, it can be very different than the other people there. Shabbos and Kashrus, and we know that's the way we live. But imagine among the Jewish people also being singled out and different. It's hard. So that all of this, you have a Kohen, a son of a Kohen, and all of his friends are able to do certain things and he can't do them. So therefore there has to be an emphasis that the Kohanim train their children to behave like Kohanim. And a Kohen is going to have more restrictions than other Jews. And one of them here is the Tuma case, where he cannot go into a graveyard. Pasuk Beis verse 2. Ki im l'sheiro akarov elav, except for his family that is close to him, which is, these are the exceptions, li'imo ule'aviv, to his mother and to his father, v'livno ule'vito ule'achiv, and to his son and to his daughter and to his brother. So a Kohen is allowed to become Tamei, and in fact, as we're going to learn, he's required to become Tamei, to his father, his mother, his son, his daughter, and his brother, the immediate relatives. All immediate relatives, the Kohen is able and required to become Tamei to, should they predecease him. What about a sister? And his sister, who is a besula, who has never been intimate with a man, hakrovai love, that is close to him, ashalohai sali ish, that she has not been to a man, la yitama, to her, he is required to become tame. So the a sister is also one of the close relatives, but only if she has not yet been married fully, as she's gone to chuppah. If it's just, they've just gone through the first stage of marriage of kiddushin, and she has not yet had chuppah, he would still become tamei to her. But once she is fully married, then the kohen is not allowed to become tamei to his sister. So it's the six relatives, father, mother, son, daughter, sister, brother, but sister is only if she has never been fully married. Pasuk, Dalet, verse 4, lo yitama baal bi'amav lehechalo. Now what about a wife? So a husband, lo yitama baal bi'amav lehechalo. A husband may not become tamei to someone, meaning his wife, who is still in his nation, which means there are other people who are able to bury her, lehechalo, to make him mundane, to profane his sanctity. So what this means is, how do they translate it here? A husband among his people shall not contaminate himself to one who desecrates him. Okay, desecrates him. What this means is, we're learning it from inference. A husband could become tamei to his wife. Actually, must become tamei to his wife, but only if she's a wife who he's allowed to be married to. If a kohen marries someone who he's not allowed to be married to, it's someone who, as they translate here, desecrates him, that profanes his sanctity, then he's not allowed to become tamei to her, even though she's his wife. So now let's explain this a little bit. We know that there are various types of prohibitions of marriage, prohibitions in the Torah. So a brother cannot marry a sister. A father cannot marry a daughter. A mother cannot marry a son. We know that. And there are other types of prohibitions as well. Many of them, it's not only that the relationship is prohibited, but marriage wouldn't even take effect. If a man takes a ring and puts it on his sister's finger and says, Hareya al mikudesh asliba tabazu, you'll be married to me with this ring, kadas Moshe v'Yisrael, it doesn't work. They're not married, because the Torah says that that sort of relationship, it's not just prohibited, but even if they try to marry, the marriage does not take effect. Nothing happens. No get is necessary. However, there are other types of prohibitions where the relationship is also prohibited, and they're not supposed to get married, but if he puts a ring on her finger, they are in fact married, even though it is prohibited, and a get would be required. So, for example, we know that a Kohen, as we're going to learn shortly, is not allowed to marry a divorcee. Can't marry the woman who had previously been married and divorced. If he tries to, he takes a ring and puts it on her finger and says, Arei Mekudesh Asli, they are married. Although it is a sin, but they are married. And he is required to give her a get. So, here the Torah is saying, a Kohen whose wife passes away, now, if it's his wife, it means that they were married. The marriage did take effect. But she is a wife that desecrates his sanctity, meaning a woman he wasn't supposed to marry, then he is not allowed to become tamei to her. If it is a woman that he's allowed to be married to, then he may become tamei to her. But one more caveat, even the woman who he's not allowed to be married to, so he's not allowed to become tamei to her. That's only be'amav if it is within his nation, which means there are others who can bury her. If there is no one else to bury her, then you go back to the default that a Kohen could become tamei to any Jew who has no one to bury it, that Jew. And the Torah is telling us that's even true with a person who he wasn't supposed to have married in the first place. But if there's no one else to bury her, he is required to bury her. But other than that, he would not be allowed to become tamei to a woman to whom he was not supposed to be married to in the first place. If it is a kosher wife, a woman he was allowed to be married to, then she would be one of the close relatives, just like his father, mother, son, daughter, brother, and unmarried sister. Same thing would apply to his wife, and he would be required to become tamei to her. Yeah?
Is there a practical difference between if a kohen would become tamei to someone they were allowed to versus someone they were not allowed to?
If it's someone they were not allowed to, then he would get lashes for doing it. If it's something he's allowed to, then it's either a mitzvah or it's permitted.
And that's the only difference.
That is the difference. Well, one is an avera, one's not.
Right, but he can undergo the process of becoming not.
Yeah, in both cases, he would. If we had the parah aduma ashes, in either case, he would then go through that to remove the tumah. Yes, yeah. But in the case where he's not allowed to, it is no different than any Jew eating pork. And if he was warned and he does it anyway, he would get lashes. Pasuk Hey, verse 5. Now, here we have an interesting thing. The Torah here is going to list three prohibitions. And it's going to sound like they are limited only to Kohanim. But the truth is, these three apply to all male Jews, not just to Kohanim. In fact, one of them is not just the males and females. Two of them are going to be to everybody, and one only to males. But it's not only to Kohanim; it's to everybody. Lo yikrechu karcha berosham. They shall not. Literally, this means bald a bald spot. As in Lashon Hakodesh, you find frequently the noun is used as a verb. It means to cut a bald spot on their head. They're not allowed to do that. This means because of mourning for a dead person, out of mourning, out of grief. To cut a bald spot in the head, that is prohibited. Ufa'as zikanam lo yigalechu, and they may not shave the corners of their beard. We learned that already about shaving the beard. Uviv saram lo yisvetu sarates, and in their flesh they may not cut a cutting. They may not lacerate themselves. Also, for mourning, for grief, for someone who passed away. It was the way of the non-Jews, when they experienced grief, to either bald themselves, cut a bald spot in their head, or to lacerate themselves, to cut themselves out of grief. Those two things are prohibited for a Jew to do, not only for a kohen, but for a Jew as well. So even though these three rules are not exclusive to Kohanim, they are listed here, and it's actually a repetition because they're listed elsewhere in the Torah, for all Jews, like we had, right, you just turn back. You had it for the beard.
But then, right after it talks about a gash.
The gash, right? Right, we had that before as well.
Not make a cut in your flesh.
Right, we had that as well. Okay, so the first question you have to ask is why is it repeated? If it applies, and we already had it before, why would we repeat it? So there, the Gemara deals with that and dissects the various Psukim, and as we find, there are several mitzvahs in the Torah where either the prohibition or the commandment is repeated, and the Gemara derives various details from the way it's written in each place. So the fact that it's repeated is not in and of itself a problem, it's just that it has to be examined to understand why is it said this way over here, and why is it said that way over there? What's the subtlety? And by putting the various sources together, you end up with a broader picture of the halacha. So that's not an uncommon thing in the Torah, where the Torah will do that. For example, the mitzvah of tefillin is written in four different places in the Torah. And various rules are derived from the way it says it here, the way it says it there, the way it doesn't say it here. There are various things like that are explained based on how the Torah presents it in different places. What's makes this example unique is that this is talking only about Kohanim. And even though it applies to everybody, and we do derive subtleties in the laws for everybody from what it says here with Kohanim, and we derive subtleties in laws for Kohanim from what it says in regard to everybody. We put the psukim together. So why would the Torah list these rules here where it can mislead a person into thinking these are Kohen rules when in fact they're really for everybody? That's a little bit confusing. So there are various approaches to this. What we'll suggest is the following, which is that the Kohanim's rules that you find here listed are special rules for Kohanim because Kohanim have greater sanctity. They have a greater level of Kedusha. The word Kadosh is going to be used over and over again in regard to Kohanim, as we will see. And these rules, the fact they can't become Tamei, we'll learn that they have prohibitions about who they're allowed to marry and not allowed to marry, above and beyond all other Jews. So those are because of the sanctity of the Kohen. These three rules, not to cause a bald spot out of grief, not to destroy the corners of the beard, not to lacerate oneself out of grief. These things are really rules that have to do with sanctity, treating your body with respect, and understanding that our bodies are not ours to do with as we please, but that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us our bodies, and that we are to treat them with the proper respect, and not to degrade our bodies by doing things to the body that are inappropriate. We have various types of rules like that. For example, we had before, one is not allowed to put a tattoo in their body. That is degrading to the body. So one is not allowed to do that. And other types of rules like that. These rules here are actually a greater level of sanctity. Because one could have thought, you know, I understand I'm not allowed to just mistreat my body. In fact, there's a law in the Torah, "Minishmartem ma'od l'nafsho seichem," you should guard your souls very much, protect your health. We know that the Torah demands that of us. I'm supposed to take care of my body. But perhaps out of grief, the person's not doing it because they're just deciding I can do whatever I want. They're experiencing grief right now. So cut them some slack. Give him a pass. So he's got grief right now. The Torah says, no, even when a person is experiencing grief, you don't get a free pass. You still have to maintain a certain level of decorum and respect for your body. And even though a person is experiencing grief and wants to cut themselves or wants to bald themselves, can't do that. Still prohibited. So we would have expected that extra level of demand of sanctity to only apply to the Kohanim, not to everybody else. It wouldn't have surprised us if all Jews are not allowed to put a tattoo in their body, but only Kohanim are not allowed to cut themselves out of grief. Other Jews can, because other Jews are not on the same level of sanctity. That wouldn't have been a shocking thing had we seen it that way. Now, that's not the rule. The rule is it applies to everybody. But we wouldn't have been shocked by that. What the Torah is really telling us is that when it says these rules regarding regular Jews, not Kohanim, when it says that even regular Jews cannot lacerate themselves out of grief, what we're learning from here is that's a higher level of sanctity. Hashem is telling us, all of you Jews, I want you to know something. In certain ways, I've given the Kohanim greater sanctity, and therefore I have greater expectations of them. In certain things, it applies to everybody. Then there are certain things which really should have only been for the Kohanim, but I want you to elevate yourselves too. I want you, in this regard, to be like Kohanim. After all, the Jews are Mamleches Kohanim. We are a kingdom of Kohanim. In a certain way, we all are Kohanim. So not in every way. We can't all work in the Beis HaMikdash. Only Kohanim can. The rule of not becoming Tamei only applies to Kohanim, not to other Jews. But Hashem is saying, there are certain mitzvos that I'm going to demand that all Jews behave like Kohanim. And that's going to be these mitzvos just listed over here. Then even though a person has grief right now, no lacerating, no cutting out hair. Can't do that. And for men, not cutting the corners of the beard. These are things which I'm going to demand that even non-Kohanim behave as if they are Kohanim. So these mitzvos, although they would have, you would have thought they'd be only Kohen related, but they apply to everybody. As Hashem says, here I'm going to demand that everybody be like a Kohen. Pasuk Vav verse 6. Kedoshim yiyu le'elokeihem, they shall be sanctified to their God. V'lo yechalelu shem elokeihem, they shall not profane the name of their God. Ki asishei Hashem, for the fire offerings of Hashem, lechem elokeihem, the bread or the food of their God, heim makrivin, they are offering, v'hoyu kodesh, they shall be sanctified. In this pasuk, the demand that the Kohanim be sanctified is mentioned explicitly twice, but in addition to that, it says they shouldn't profane Hashem's name. And the reason is because they are offering the karbanos. We learn from here, as we will see also in another pasuk, that they don't have a choice in this matter. It's not that a kohen can say, you know what, I'm not really interested in this kohen business. I won't work in the Beis HaMikdash. Treat me like a regular Jew. I'm not looking to not keep the Torah. I just don't want to have this extra level of responsibility, this extra level of Kedusha. I'll just behave like a regular Jew. And don't make me behave like a Kohen. The Torah says they don't have the choice. Person who is a descendant of Aaron must behave in this way. And if they choose not to, the rest of us Jews are required to force them. They are taken to court. And they are punished if they do not adhere to the laws of Kohanim. So it's not a voluntary thing. It's not like, if you want this responsibility, take it. And if you don't, okay, it's all right. That's not the way it works. Just as we as Jews cannot choose to say, you know what, I'll accept the seven mitzvahs and just do like the non-Jews. And okay, so I won't get all the reward in Olam Haba, but I'll just give me an easier life. I'll act like the non-Jew. Can't do that. We're born Jewish. That's the way it is. 613 mitzvahs. No choices anymore. That's it. Same thing here with the Kohen. If he's born a Kohen, he's a Kohen. He cannot choose to repudiate his responsibility as a Kohen. Now we'll talk about a twist on that soon. Bli Neder. Pasuk Zayin. Verse 7, we get to the marriage rules. Isha zona v'chalala lo yikachu. A woman who is a zona or a chalala. Now the translation is, zona is harlot, prostitute, and chalala is desecrated. Lo yikachu. It does not literally mean a harlot, as I'll explain in a moment. But these women, they may not marry. Visha grusha me isha, and a woman who is divorced from her husband, lo yikachu, they may not marry. Ki kadosh hu le'elokav, for he is sanctified to his God. What does it mean, a zona v'chalala, a prostitute and a woman who is desecrated? So what that means is the following. Both those cases, zona and chalala, refer to a woman who has previously been involved in a relationship that was prohibited. If she was involved in a relationship that was prohibited, then she may not marry a kohen. A kohen may not marry her if she had been involved in a prohibited relationship. But there are two types of prohibited relationships. One is a prohibited relationship for all Jews, and the other is a prohibited relationship for Kohanim. So, a woman who was engaged, that's the wrong word to use, a woman who was involved in a prohibited relationship that is prohibited to all Jews, she becomes what is called a zona. Now, zona means a prostitute. The reason why she gets that name is because she was involved in a relationship which is not a marriage relationship. So if a brother and a sister have an intimate relationship, the sister is called a zona because she was involved in a relationship that cannot be marriage. That's why she's called a zona. And a kohen would not be allowed to marry her, even though she was never married. But since she was involved in that relationship, she becomes a zona, and the kohen is not allowed to marry her. A regular Jew could marry her, but a kohen cannot. Chalala is a woman who had a relationship with a relationship that is prohibited for kohanim. So, for example, we're going to learn later that a woman who is a widow may not marry a Kohen Gadol. But she could marry a regular Kohen. A regular Kohen is allowed to marry a widow. Only a Kohen Gadol cannot marry a widow. What if a Kohen Gadol does have an intimate relationship with a widow? That's prohibited. So if he marries her after divorce, they're not allowed to have that relationship. But they did. That woman has now become a chalala. That woman is now prohibited to a regular Kohen. When she was just a widow, she was permitted to a regular Kohen. But because she got involved in a relationship that was prohibited, therefore she now becomes a chalala. And she cannot marry a regular Kohen. Or if a woman is born from a relationship between a Kohen and someone he was not supposed to have a relationship with. So a Kohen marries a divorcee and they have a daughter. That daughter is a chalala. That daughter is not allowed to marry a regular Kohen. She can marry a regular Jew, but she cannot marry a Kohen. Kohen cannot marry a woman who is born from a marriage that was prohibited, even though it was only prohibited for Kohanim. So that's Zona and Chalala. Grusha, which is a divorcee, that is self-explanatory, that a Kohen is not allowed to marry these three types of women. Included in this would be a woman who has a relationship with a non-Jew is prohibited to a Kohen. Pasuk Ches, verse 8, and it only takes one time. One intimate act with any of these prohibitions makes that woman forever prohibited to a Kohen.
What if it was a forester who wasn't consensual?
It would not make a difference in this case. It would not make a difference. With a Kohen, there's all kinds of rules that even though it may not be on purpose, it doesn't make a difference. It's going to be the same rule. Pasuk Ches, verse 8, V'kidash to, you shall sanctify him. Meaning, again, if he doesn't want to, he says, you know, forget it. I want to marry this divorcee. Leave me alone. You don't leave him alone. You force him. You force him not to do it. You have to sanctify him. Ki eslechem elokecha hu makriv, because he is offering the bread of your God, which means he's offering the karbanos. Kadosh yelach, he shall be sanctified to you. Now, that's a different rule. The first one is you force him to keep these rules. The second one is he shall be sanctified to you. You are required to treat him with respect. Since he's the Kohen, therefore you're required to treat him with respect, which is why, for example, if there is a mizuman where someone leads the benching, if there's a Kohen present, then the Kohen is asked first to lead the benching because we're required to respect the Kohen. That's an example. Ki kadosh ani Hashem mekadishchem, for I, God, who sanctify you, am sanctified, and I tell you that you must sanctify the Kohanim. And one more rule that applies to Kohanim, uvas ish Kohen ki sechel liznos, the daughter of a man who's a Kohen, that she profanes herself to have a prohibited intimate relationship, really to commit adultery. Esavia hi mechaleles, she is profaning her father. Bo'esh tisarev, she shall be burned in fire. We know that adultery is punishable with capital punishment. Adultery, we've learned before that a person, if there's witnesses and there is warning, then both the man and woman are put to death. The death penalty for adultery is chenek, is strangulation. We learned before there are four types of misas bezdin, of capital punishment given out by the courts. We learned before, skila, which is stoning, sreifa is burning, herek, which is beheading, chenek, which is strangulation. That there is a hierarchy, which means there is a more stringent way of putting someone to death and a more lenient way of putting somebody to death. Now, death is never fun. Death is never painless. It is not nice, no matter how it's done. But there are, of these four, some of them are worse, some of them are better, which means they're not as bad as the other ones. So there is a dispute over which is the most stringent and which is the most lenient. But everybody agrees that stoning and burning are worse, beheading and strangulation are better. Everybody agrees to that breakdown. Within the two pairs of two, there is a machlokas, there's a difference of opinion, which one is worse. Is stoning worse than burning or burning worse than stoning? And similarly, strangulation and beheading, which one's worse, strangulation or beheading? But those two groups are certainly that stoning and burning is worse than strangulation and beheading. This is saying that a daughter of a Kohen who commits adultery, the form of death that she gets is bumped up to the more stringent death because of the fact that she's the daughter of a Kohen. She's going to be put to death anyway. Anybody who commits adultery will be put to death if there's warning and if there's witnesses. But her death will be elevated to a worse type of death because she's a daughter of a Kohen. So whereas, again, here I'm picking one opinion in the Gemara, but I don't want to get so far afield with all the different opinions. Whereas a non-daughter of a Kohen who commits adultery, the punishment is strangulation, which is of the lower tier, the less stringent type of death. For the daughter of a Kohen, it is bumped up to burning, which is a more stringent death. As we learned before, just to reiterate, burning does not mean burning at the stake. It is using hot lead that is put down the mouth. Yes?
Two questions. This is fly. I thought that when the daughter of a Kohen marries a Yisrael, she is no longer a Kohen.
So we're going to learn later, you're right, that the daughter of a Kohen who marries a Yisrael, there are rules about her eating truma, right? But she still is the daughter of a Kohen.
So when it comes to adultery, does this apply today?
We don't have the death penalty today.
In today's time, we don't have a special status for the daughter of the Kohen.
Well, the Torah is telling us there should be a special status. There's no application of it today. Okay. There's nothing we do today that singles out the daughter of a Kohen to be any different than anybody else because...
So was that the only status that a daughter of a Kohen had?
In this regard, that's true. We don't find any
anything
other...
Anything else that would... Well, she
was stand out? Well, she's allowed to eat truma. Right. As long as she's not married to a non-Kohen, she's allowed to eat truma. So a regular Jew is not allowed to eat truma.
So those are the
and bikurim, right. Chala.
I notice in the first part here, it's talking to the Kohenim, then it's they shall not do this or they shall not do that. And then here it says, you shall sanctify him. And
well, you shall, it's talking to the other Jews. You.
Yeah, but how do we know that?
Yeah. You need Chazal to tell us that. You're right. The pronouns are getting confusing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The Gemara points this out, and the Gemara has to figure out what each pasuk is talking to. But you're correct.
I mean, originally it said Hashem said to Moses,
No, you're right. It is. That is confusing. That is definitely confusing. Now, today, when someone believes themselves to be a Kohen, we take that at face value, which means that because being a Kohen can only happen because your father was a Kohen, and his father was a Kohen all the way back, so the Kohanim tend to have a pretty solid basis to believe that they are Kohanim. However, we don't have clear yichus. We don't have clear lineage from most Kohanim. It's not so easy to know that a person is definitely a Kohen. And mistakes do happen. It does happen that a family or an individual could believe that they are a Kohen or Kohanim, and they discover later that they're really not Kohanim. It could happen, although it is rare.
Even if their last name is Cohen?
Yeah, well, certainly today. Today, last name Cohen can be non-Jewish. I mean, yeah. Right. But it could happen. It could happen. Yeah, it could happen that the names get confused, and people get confused, and it can happen, especially with the upheaval of all of the, you know, with the Holocaust and everything. Things can happen, and people can get confused. It does happen, although rare. I do know of one family that had thought that they were Kohanim and discovered that they were not. I do know of such a family.
How do you discover that?
I don't know how they discovered it, but they did discover that they were not Kohanim. Even the ones who you know, as far back as they can go, they know they were Kohanim, but they can't trace themselves all the way back to Aaron. Very few families can do that. Now, some can. Nobody traces themselves. Nobody has a tree all the way back to Aaron. But there are a few. Famous Kohanim in Jewish history. If you can trace yourself back to one of those, then you know, right. So
Rabbi Mordechai Cohen.
So Rabbi Mordechai Cohen, his family has a Shtar Yichus, as a document that traces themselves back. That's important particularly for the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen, where if a non-Kohen has a firstborn son, then there's a mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen, of redeeming the firstborn son. So it is preferable to use a Kohen that you know for a fact is a Kohen. So a Kohen that is able to trace themselves back, that's the preferred type of Kohen to use for that mitzvah. But again, most Kohanim can't do that. But there are those who can, and that's advantageous. The Kohanim who cannot. So there have been cases where a Kohen, someone who's believed to be a Kohen, says, I would like to marry this woman. I know that she is divorced. I know that a Kohen is not allowed to marry a divorcee. Well, you know what? Maybe I'm not a Kohen. Now, we have a mitzvah here that we are required to ensure that Kohanim keep the laws of Kohen. Now, aside from the fact that today we can't really do that because we have no power, we have no Beis Din that has real power, but we certainly can't encourage someone to do an Aveira, just like we wouldn't encourage someone to drive on Shabbos, and we wouldn't encourage someone to eat pork, we certainly cannot encourage a Kohen to marry a divorcee. And if a Kohen wants to marry a divorcee, we would not encourage it. We wouldn't say mazel tov. We wouldn't attend the wedding. We wouldn't do anything because it's all prohibited. So we would say no. But a Kohen might want to argue, well, maybe I'm not a Kohen. So that argument is a weak argument. It's a weak argument because, generally speaking, we accept the lineage of Kohanim. But it is not... It's not that there is it's an ironclad proof that he's a Kohen just because his family claims to be Kohanim. It's not ironclad. It's not 100%. It's 98% true, but it's not always true. So you do have examples where people do that. It is not the best practice to do. If you know someone like that or you're involved with someone like that, so then you have to ask your LOR, your local Orthodox rabbi, how to handle that situation. But in case you do hear of such a thing, you'll know where it's coming from, that today, because we don't have real proof that each family are Kohanim, so you do have that argument that floats around. In theory, a person could argue the other way. Maybe I am a Kohen, even though we don't know of such a thing. So, person, but we nobody says that. Like, we're not going to give the person the first aliyah and shul because he says, "Well, maybe I'm a Kohen," but maybe you're not. Like, you know, so we don't do that. So the Kohen lineage, we take at face value. We presume that the Kohanim do know what they're talking about, and when they say they're Kohen. Yeah.
When you mentioned Pidyon HaBen, it reminds me that's another instance where the daughter of a Kohen.
Yes, that's true. It's a good point. Right, but that's also of a Levi. Meaning like this, the firstborn son of a Yisrael and Yisraelis, where both the father and mother are neither Kohen nor Levi, that firstborn son needs to be redeemed. But if either the father or the mother are either Kohanim or Levim, then there is no Pidyon HaBen. So that would also affect the mother's status. My brother is a firstborn Yisrael, my brother, but my mother is a bas levi, and therefore my father did not do a pidyon haben. But my wife and I are both Yisraelim, and I did do a pidyon haben for my son. So that's because neither one of us are kohen or levi. So that would be the case, right? So we mentioned you a humorous aside on this. My family, the Pransky family, are Yisraelim. So we are. When we moved here to Atlanta, it turns out that there is another person living in Atlanta, actually Marietta, and his name is Daniel Pransky. And when we moved here and people were trying to figure out where I was, if they didn't know where I had moved to, they would get him. And so he got many emails and texts about me. So we ended up meeting because of that. And since then, they've been to our house. We've been to a simcha there. So we've had interaction. No, we're not related. You see, my family is from Philadelphia. His family is from Boston. There's a large Pransky family out of Boston. His family are Kohanim.
Oh, that's
funny. We are not. So we are not related.
That's what you brought it up.
That's right. We are not related. So you see that you can have the same last name and same first name even, we're not related.
Go ahead.
Right.
What about the genetic?
So that is a form of testing. We don't use that as 100% halachic proof, but it is used as a when you're trying to put together various things. That is part of the puzzle. That's part of the puzzle. Now, a Kohen who cannot work in the Beis HaMikdash. Let's say a Kohen is a Baal Mum. They have a blemish. God forbid, they're missing a finger. So they can't work in the Beis HaMikdash. But they still are included in these laws. He cannot marry a Grusha. Can't marry a woman who's divorced. He cannot become Tameh. Same rules apply. However, a Kohen who is a Cholol is a Kohen who was born from a Kohen marrying somebody he was not supposed to marry, that person loses the status of Kohen. So if a Kohen marries a Gerusha, a Kohen marries a divorcee, and they have a son, that boy is treated like a regular Yisrael, loses the status of Kohen.
So then the genetic thing.
That's correct. So the genetic thing would not be 100% on that either. As that person would now, that boy would not be included in the laws of Kohen. He can become Tameh, can marry whoever he wants, cannot work in the Beis HaMikdash. We will not give him the first Aliyah. For all intents and purposes, he is not a Kohen. Can't Duchen. He's lost the status of Kohuna. So there is such a thing as offspring of a Kohen who is not a Kohen. To be a Kohen, your father has to be a Kohen. But just because one's father is a Kohen does not necessarily mean the son is a Kohen if he was born from a marriage that wasn't supposed to be. Yeah?
Can a Kohen today go into a hospital?
So that's a good question. A hospital that has a morgue is a difficult situation because the way Tumah works is depending on where the body is. Tumah can sometimes go through a ceiling. Depending on the laws of Tumah are complicated. They could go through a ceiling. And in addition, sometimes they go through doors, depending on what's happening. So a hospital that has a morgue in the hospital is something that a Kohen really needs to find out whether they can walk into such a hospital. The hospitals that don't have a morgue, so even though people do die in hospitals, typically speaking, I believe that they are more lenient with Kohanim, and they are able to go in under certain circumstances. But it is a tricky thing for a Kohen to do, to go into a hospital.
Now, would that affect a Kohen giving birth?
Yes, that would affect. And as if a woman who's married to a Kohen is giving birth, and if the baby is a boy, then the rules would apply even to an infant, that they should not become Tameh. But again, the rules of Tumah are somewhat complex, and in many cases it is okay, depending on how it has to do with how the building is constructed and where the doors are and how their doors are used. A maternity ward is the ward in the hospital that has the least amount of fatalities. even though people die anywhere in the hospital, but a maternity ward is much more about producing life than the other way around. So there's less of an issue, again, depending on how the hospital is built. But it is a complex question. Okay, that brings us to the Kohen Gadol. So we're already close to the answer. We're gonna stop here. Mizrach Hashem, next week we'll continue with Pasuk Yud, with the Kohen Gadol.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.